Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
Welcome one and all to another day here at the Damage Report. I'm John Iderola, very lucky to be joined by Jessica Burbank. Jessica, how's it going?
We're back in action, John and Jessica.
You're back, you're here. You've been back on the network for a few days. I know that you recently had a struggle with one of the many diseases ravaging America. I have been told by people for months, and you know, some people for years, that COVID isn't anything that we need to worry about. What do you think?
The plague, not fun to get. If you can avoid getting it, definitely avoid getting it. Just it's really not fun. I was knocked out for like 5 days, just didn't leave the bed. But I lived to tell the story.
Yeah, and you've had experience with it before. This is still a serious thing. Like, there's increasing amounts of COVID here in LA and around the country. There's, I think, record-breaking amounts of the flu. There's RSV as well. Everyone, make like me and don't talk to anyone ever, so you can avoid some of this stuff. But anyway, wear masks, avoid gatherings if you can. I know it's December, it's rough. I'm gonna be going to some. I'm gonna be masking up, and I've gotten whatever boosters I can have and everything. But everyone, stay safe, because this is looking like it could end up being a pretty dark winter. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, take a test before you.
Oh yeah, also definitely take the test. That is a good idea. Like, we're gonna be having our holiday party. We are vaccinated, we're gonna be taking tests. Like, and even then you don't know, but it's the best defense that can be offered. With that, we have a lot of news that we're gonna be diving into here in the show. Not only the breaking news having to do with Brittany Griner, we've got updates on the documents investigation Mar-a-Lago. They found more documents. AOC being investigated for ethics violations. We're gonna be talking about that. The New York Times about to strike. And then in the aftermath, we're diving into Bill Maher's view on young environmentalists. Which way is he gonna go? Does he like them? Does he not like them? You don't know. You have to tune in to find out. And we're gonna be talking about AI as well. I've been trying out that new chat bot that's got everyone freaked out, and I'm a little bit freaked out, not gonna lie. So we're gonna be talking about that in the aftermath as well. In advance of that, please hit the like button and share the stream so that people know we're live. And if you wanna send us any comments, tweets, or super chats, we'll respond as we go. But with all that said, Jessica, you ready to start the show?
Let's get into it
with a little bit of good news, although it's good news that has left some people absolutely infuriated. Let's start with this.
Moments ago, standing together with her wife, Sherelle, in the Oval Office, I spoke with Brittany Griner. She's safe. She's on a plane. She's on her way home. After months of being unjustly detained in Russia, held under intolerable circumstances, Brittany will soon be back in the arms of her loved ones, and she should have been there all along.
So, this is kind of a surprise. There had been multiple updates along the way having to do with Brittany Griner being arrested and eventually imprisoned in Russia. If you have not been following this, she is a American basketball star who was caught with drugs, and that became, apparently from Russia's point of view, the biggest crime of the century, I suppose. But anyway, it's led to a lot of negotiations about possible trades, and that is what ended up happening here. The trade took place in the UAE. It did involve leaving behind Paul Whelan, an American corporate security executive who remains jailed in Russia. I know that his family has been speaking out about this trade. Viktor Bout, who's a Russian arms dealer, was given back to Russia as part of this deal. That's what the trade was. Jessica, what do you think?
I think that this is great. I mean, Brittany Griner should have never been in prison in Russia in the first place, because using marijuana is not a violent thing to do. You're not hurting anybody else. It, of course, should not be illegal. This is not a reason for someone to be detained who was invited there by the country to play basketball to make some extra money. It's just ridiculous that she was ever detained. It's obviously Russia playing politics, but it's great she's home. It should have happened much sooner.
Yeah. Yeah, look, I think for most people, this news is being greeted as great news. The idea that she would spend one moment in a prison for what she did is madness. It's, as you say, it's them insanely playing politics, both in terms of making this big international ordeal over this, and also having the laws at all. And they're not unique in doing that. Here in the US, most of our government officials still love to pretend that marijuana is this terrible thing. Who's to say how damaging it is or what it does to you? I mean, nobody's ever tried it. So they play politics with it. We play politics with it. Most of the legislators probably in both countries who are working to keep it outlawed have consumed at the very least marijuana on a regular basis, if not far worse substances. So it is, it's ridiculous that she could have spent any time there. So great news that she's coming back. Of course, the nature of the trade, I understand, can be frustrating. The idea that you would have to give up an arms dealer with all of the baggage that comes with him for an athlete who had a little bit of weed, that's insulting, deeply insulting. But that is how, you know, that's how these international things go. They don't often make sense. They're not often fair. They knew that they had leverage. They knew that a lot of people really wanted to get her back. They knew it was looking really bad for the United States and Biden that they weren't able to get her back. And so they used that to get what they wanted, which is someone who had committed far more serious crimes.
I think it's hilarious that American conservatives, or this particular faction of American conservatives, are mad about this. Is the NRA seeing the tweets where they're comparing an arms dealer to someone who used marijuana? Because the way the right treats these crimes in America, I mean, selling guns is great. They love the guys who sell guns. And the party of the war on drugs and reefer madness, I mean, it seems a little bit backwards that they think the arms dealer for someone who used marijuana is a bad trade. By their standards, that would be a great trade. They love people who sell guns. Doesn't make sense to me.
Exactly. And the only thing bad about guns is what influence you might be under while holding them. I mean, a gun isn't dangerous, even an AR-15. It's just if you've had a little bit of marijuana, then maybe it's a problem. But anyway, as you allude to, they are frustrated, they are angry. So we're gonna turn to that in just a second. First though, I did want to give Brittany's family a chance to weigh in. So let's go to that for just a second.
BG's not here to say this, but I will gladly speak on her behalf and say that BG and I will remain committed to the work of getting every American home, including Paul, whose family is in our hearts today as we celebrate BG being home. We do understand that there are still people out here who are enduring what I endured the last 9 months of missing tremendously their loved ones.
That is Sherelle Greiner. And look, I can totally understand how. Look, your primary concern is going to be getting your family member back. But also, since you've been in this experience, you probably have even more compassion for other families who are in that same experience. So I understand why they would be considered allies in this shared cause, and she'd be talking about it at this. Beyond that, though, anyone who tries to make a family member of Brittany Griner feel bad because of this trade, go 100% of the way F yourself, honestly. Like, they want to get their family member back. And I can only imagine what sort of social media strike back and political commentary. We're gonna turn to a little bit of the immediate stuff now, but it is not gonna go away in a day or a week. Sherelle Greiner's not responsible for every little minute iteration and variation and what happens in international diplomacy. And yet I am sure that Sherelle, as well as Brittany, will face, I'm gonna say, months or years of harassment for it seeming unfair or whatever. They're gonna tie it to all sorts of stuff, and I'm already pre-disgusted. Any final thoughts before we move on to Fox News?
John, you're telling me that when the United States State Department decides to negotiate hostage situations, they're not putting the family members at the forefront and saying, you know what, you call the shots. What do you think we should do next? That's not how it goes.
Yeah, I think they should release the shot of the big conference room table and the entire cabinet's there, and Sherelle's seated at the head of the table, right, calling all that. Like, obviously they have interest, but they don't have influence or power over this. I mean, they have some influence, sort of indirectly. They don't have power over it directly, though. Leave them the hell alone. Many on the right are infuriated by the deal that is bringing back Brittany Griner. There is only so much of it I'm going to show you, though. Don Jr. has a lot to say about it. I hate him. I'm not going to show you his comments. They're terrible. And I'm sure that on Twitter, all of them are tripping over each other in their effort to say the most disgusting thing about this deal. We're going to go to just one, because this is someone who is not just a pundit, but was nearly a governor and could well be our VP someday. Here's what Carrie Lake had to say.
If I were, being held the conditions looked horrible, by the way. I mean, she's so big and tall, and she's in, and literally they look like they keep the prisoners in a cage.
Yeah.
And so the conditions were obviously horrible. But if you told me we're going to release you for this guy, I would maybe say, you know what? Let me stay a little bit longer. Keep working on that negotiation. Let's see if we can find something a little bit more level.
Yeah, you would think so.
So first of all, you all just witnessed in real time Carrie Lake like finding out what a prison is. It looks like they're being held in a cage, because they are. They're cages. They can't leave. It's like they lock the cages. Did you know that? And they're not free. But anyway, I love the idea that someone who is facing possibly the rest of their life in some of the most brutal conditions imaginable should be told, oh, we've reached a deal, and they should volunteer to stay, which is insane. It's madness. Also, it's not up to her. They're not consulting, as we said earlier on the show, they're not consulting Cheryl. They're also not consulting Brittany. It isn't up to her on whether the deal happens. That's the whole problem. She's not free. None of this is up to her. She's just waiting to find out what happens. So that is, in some ways, that seems less disgusting than, for instance, what Crowder had to say. And again, I'm not showing you that because screw him. That's more just directly awful smears and all sorts of misogyny and racism being sent at Brittany. With Carrie Lake, it's like the guise of support, but it's still putting the onus on her to still be imprisoned, which is insane. What do you think?
Yeah, the idea that Brittany Griner is some kind of international criminal is wild, because that suggests that she would have committed some kind of crime that violated international human rights law or international laws. Henry Kissinger is an international criminal. Brittany Griner did something that's legal in many places around the world, including in the country that she came from. So it's just ridiculous the way they're talking about this, as if any kind of trade would be a good trade in this situation, because she shouldn't have been held hostage and put in prison in the first place. So it doesn't make sense the way they're saying, well, we should have found someone better to trade her with. Who would be an equivalent trade for this kind of situation? There just isn't one. And people like Carrie Lake and Steven Crowder just seemingly don't think before they speak. They don't need to follow any kind of logical argument, because what they appealed to is exactly what you said. It's the misogyny and it's the racism. It doesn't have to make sense. It just needs to get their base riled up.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. They're going to formulate what they say based on the incentives and disincentives that have been established for them, based largely on how their audience has responded to past stuff. And the audience is not like hungry for logic and well-crafted arguments. That's not actually why someone would watch Crowder or support Carrie Lake. They want their darkest impulses to be fed. That's what they want. And in that area, they are delivering. Yeah, I don't know who would be an equal trade. I don't even want to have to think of something so stupid, some crime so minor that it would be equivalent to what happened. But I would also love to point out that the real reason so many on the right are speaking out against this is because she's a woman, she's black, she's in particular part of the WNBA. Every one of those things makes her ripe for being attacked brutally. And they look, just to keep it real, they like Putin's government, they like Putin. And so they have no problem whatsoever with Putin doing whatever he wants. But to also be clear, there's so much in their reaction to this that's like, and Trump, his initial comments about her were like, she should have known that you have to abide by their rules, which is technically true. But to be very clear, right wingers have never felt restrained from critiquing other societies they disagree with. Can we be clear about that? They haven't often felt like just because something is the status quo in another country, that makes it morally right and needs to be respected. They've been very clear about their willingness to critique other societies, governments, ideologies, and ways of life. Suddenly, all of a sudden, whatever law Russia has makes all the sense in the world, and how dare you not comply with it? Anyway, any final thoughts before we move on?
It's just that these are the same guys that are like, don't tread on me, taxes are bad, having central authoritarian government in the United States is bad, we can't let the federal government have too much power. But dictatorial leadership in Russia and Putin, very, very sexy. You should always follow all of the laws there, no matter how ridiculous they are. Again, these two things don't make sense. They can't be true in the same reality.
They don't, no. Okay, with that said, let's talk about a different proto-authoritarian they're big fans of. Would you believe it? Donald Trump stole more documents, apparently. They were recently recovered during searches of different Trump properties. Lawyers found at least two items marked classified after an outside team hired by Trump looked at a storage unit that he had in West Palm Beach, Florida. It had been used by Trump for a variety of things. We're gonna give you a rundown of some of the stuff that was found. These two classified documents were immediately turned over to the FBI. You're probably wondering, what do they concern? Nobody seems to know, or at the very least, they're not saying. The Washington Post, who did the initial reporting on this, they can't tell. Trump isn't saying, and obviously the FBI isn't interested in leaking that just yet, although we'll see. Leaks have come out of this investigation in the past. For now, though, we know that the search was one of at least three searches for classified materials conducted by this outside team over the course of the past few weeks. And this is as a result of a federal judge really putting a lot of pressure on the Trump team to make clear whether they had turned in all of the documents that had been stolen. That is an ongoing struggle. And for some reason, the fact that judges and federal agencies and the FBI and the DOJ have to keep getting them to comply with the law, none of that guarantees that there's gonna be legal consequences, which is sort of weird. In any event, what we do know about the storage unit is they had previously had a bunch of stuff after Biden's inauguration in an office. They eventually moved that stuff to the storage unit. And in it, it had a mix of boxes, gifts, suits, and clothes. Suits, swords, wrestling belts, and all sorts of things. This anonymous person says, to my knowledge, he has never even been to that storage unit. I don't think anyone in Trump world could tell you what's in that storage unit. And from, you know, 1,000 feet up, looking at that sort of statement, that seems like a good thing for Trump. That it's not like he's going on the weekend to the storage unit and stashing a couple of choice documents. On the other hand, the fact that apparently without any plan whatsoever, totally accidentally, they just moved some stuff and that randomly also has classified documents they stole from the White House, I don't see him as a great thing for Donald Trump, but I don't know, maybe I'm biased. Jessica, what do you think?
I remember us covering this story when they obtained the boxes from Mar-a-Lago. There were files that were empty, folders that were supposed to have the documents in them, completely empty. And when they got the boxes from Mar-a-Lago, they were like, we don't know where those documents are. I know where they are. They were obviously in Donald Trump's possession. And now they were like, they could be anywhere. We don't know where they are. Obviously, Donald Trump had them the entire time. I mean, the way that they've treated this entire thing, why did it take them so long to investigate this in the first place when the documents were missing? Of course he has them, and I'm sure he knows how to use a copy machine and probably has additional copies of them. I mean, it's just so ridiculous how the Justice Department has handled this.
Yeah, well, there's one other layer of that's a bit ridiculous. Apparently is the way they do things, but I still find it ridiculous. I'm not an expert on literally any of this. I'm coming to the news the way everyone else is. And some of this stuff just doesn't make sense to a relatively regular person. So let's run through this extra little wrinkle. So in addition to this storage unit, the team hired an outside company to search Trump's golf club in Bedminster and Trump Tower in New York. They also searched at least one other property. And by the way, the company that was brought in to do this is said to have special expertise in finding documents. And I would just love to know what that special expertise is. Like, it's literally pieces of paper. What is your training like? But okay, I'm sure it's very complicated and worth millions of dollars. Anyway, the team offered the FBI the opportunity to observe the search, but the offer was declined. It would be unusual, says the Washington Post, for federal agents to monitor a search of someone's property conducted by anyone other than another law enforcement agency. And so I guess I'll assume that that's true and that this is how they normally do this. That seems weird. So Trump's people hired a company to search this place and we don't have any oversight on that. Great, it is an outside company, let's be clear about that. But they're being paid by Trump. Now, to be fair, they turned in these two documents. So, you know, they're not like obviously covering up literally everything, but is it crazy to think that they might be a bit biased? Or I know they're supposed to be outside independent. It seems weird that they wouldn't, the FBI wouldn't send like one guy along. Jessica, what do you think? Am I being unfair?
I don't know. I think this could be a situation where Trump really wants to comply and they're like, all right, buddy, we're just gonna turn over these documents. Where are they? And he's like, honestly, I don't know. I don't know where they are. That's kind of relatable because two-factor authentication for the password is not my plan B. That's my plan A. I don't know any of my passwords. I would not remember where I left these documents. I mean, they're classified documents. They're important. You're the president. Maybe you're little bit careful, but honestly, he could have just misplaced them, John.
Maybe. I mean, look, you've got the fact that he stole many, many documents, the fact that they clearly have been moved from place to place, and that his brain is tapioca pudding. When you combine those three things, I buy that he doesn't know where they all are. anyway, we'll see if these two extra documents matter. I mean, if they are only as damning as the average stolen document, then this is a drop in the bucket, I suppose, a bucket filled up with state secrets. But we'll see, maybe they're special, I don't know. Anyway, with that said, we're gonna take our first break. When we come back, lots more news to talk about, including Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez under investigation. We're gonna try to figure out why after this. Okay, everybody, let's jump into some more news. I'm not actually throwing rocks at dogs. I love dogs. Do you guys realize that I cannot see a dog in public without squeeing? It's unbearable, actually. But anyway, let's talk about something other than dogs. Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez is apparently under investigation by the House Ethics Committee. And God only knows where this thing is gonna go as the months pass by. The committee is not yet indicating why the Congresswoman's under investigation. Staff is not saying anything either, whether they know or not. They might know, they might not, but no one is yet saying exactly why this has happened. The committee does say that they received a referral from the Office of Congressional Ethics, a separate office that reviews misconduct allegations back in June. That meant that a majority of that body had decided the matter was substantial enough to refer to the committee. By the way, it's chaired by Democratic Representative Susan Wild of Pennsylvania. So everyone's trying to figure out, what could she possibly be under investigation for? And the best theory that I've seen so far, which has not been confirmed by literally anyone, is that it might be an investigation spurred by a September 2021 complaint from the Conservative American Accountability Foundation accusing AOC of accepting an impermissible gift by attending the 2021 Met Gala, where the cost of attendance cost $35,000. She was invited as a guest and didn't have to pay for a ticket. If you've somehow forgotten about this event, it's the one where she wore the tax the rich dress, which infuriated literally every right winger of the country. She didn't keep the dress, by the way. She wasn't allowed to because that would be considered a dress. Also, bear in mind, Representative Carolyn Maloney, a fellow Democrat from New York, has attended the Met Gala multiple times. So we do not know that this is why she's being investigated, but it could explain it. It is a gift in theory. You could make that case. But Jessica, what do you think?
Okay, I'm a little confused as to why Miss Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez is under fire for this when hundreds of thousands of dollars have been given to our politicians so that they privatize our education, they defund public education so your children go to worse schools, they privatize the energy grid, they sell you out to corporations so now your utility bills are costing you an arm and a leg. I mean, they are bought and sold by corporations, insider trading. Nancy Pelosi's family outperforms the market year over year, so much so that people on Wall Street created a portfolio called the insider portfolio that mimics her trades so you can make the same amount of money as her. I mean, it's ridiculous that her attending this event is bringing her under fire, but I have some advice for Ms. AOC. And it's that if you don't want your colleagues to dislike you so much so that they investigate you, you should try being less popular. They're clearly very mad that they all weren't invited. That's my advice.
Exactly. Stop being popular and cool and trendy and stylish. You dummy. Why are you doing those things? You know that that's provocative. 100%. By the way, someone in the chat had said, why is she being investigated if that other Democrat isn't? To be clear, I believe that Representative Carolyn Maloney has also been targeted for investigations for that reason. I think that's one of the reasons that people think this might be what AOC is being investigated for. Again, I want to be clear, we do not know that this is why she's being investigated. I will also say, though, I agree with Jessica that considering everything that's going on, it's ridiculous that this is being focused on. I mean, as we pointed out, the Georgia Senate race was a $400 million race. People did not spend $400 million just for the love of the game. Like, they're trying to get something that they think is worth $400 million, to be clear. That said, I'm perfectly fine if they make her pay for it out of campaign dollars or something. Like, look, you can go too far with this where literally everything you get invited to could be considered a contribution in kind or whatever. I mean, like, she was just at another strike. Like, in theory, what if they'd charge? I don't want to get into that sort of game, but it is $35,000. So if they wanted her to pay that, that seems relatively fair to me. I think it's fair that they didn't let her keep the dress. I do think that we should crack down on gifts and those sorts of things. But I also know that the committee is saying that they're going to announce what they're going to do next year. It's the same committee, but not really. Because next year, that committee is going to be led by Republicans. And so, even if it is just the dress thing or whatever, God only knows what they're going to do since it's AOC. Like, if you think, as Jessica was pointing out, that the Democrats are mad that she's popular, every Republican in the country is thinking about AOC right now, and they're not happy about it. So, I don't know what the committee is going to end up doing once the Republicans are in control, but it's going to be unbearable. Any final thoughts?
Yeah, I think maybe they believe that taxing the rich would be unethical, and that's another reason why they're investigating, because we know the United States doesn't have a track record of taxing the rich in the recent half century. So maybe that's a factor.
Yeah. We know that they are going, they've already told us they're going to be like, they're just going to be doing investigations. They're not going to try to get anything passed. I mean, they wouldn't really be able to anyway, but they also don't want to, because you pass legislation to fix problems. And from the point of view of most Republicans, there aren't any problems. They're already rich and happy. They'd like to lower taxes, and they'll get to that. But there aren't a lot of problems to actually fix. And so they will be investigating AOC and Ilhan Omar and Rashida Tlaib and Ayanna Pressley and, oh God, they hate Katie Porter. Like, they are going to be finding any ridiculous thing. And the thing is, like if they've actually done something, if AOC has committed some sort of big ethical violation, then that should be found out. The issue is that these investigations are not predicated on a serious belief that those things have happened, and they will not be deemed a success by the right if they discover clear evidence of those things. Take a look at the Twitter expose thing on Hunter Biden this week. They don't need to find anything to consider it a win. And so you need to prepare yourself, dear viewer, for 2 years of nothing burgers on a massive daily scale and schedule, that still every conservative relative you have is going to consider proof positive that AOC is getting paid off by George Soros. And I don't even want to think about what they're going to say about Ilhan Omar. So that's all coming. Anyway, with that said, why don't we move to other news? The New York Times, which for a very long time has not necessarily been a great source for news from the point of view of workers, those concerned with workers' rights, is about to get a dose of it themselves. They're about to experience a strike, which actually I believe might be live as of right now. There's a 24-hour walkout being conducted by hundreds and hundreds of their employees, consisting of both journalists as well as other employees. Apparently, newsroom employees and other members of the News Guild of New York say they're fed up with bargaining that has dragged on since their last contract expired way back in March of 2021. And they announced last week, that more than 1,100 employees would stage a specific 24-hour work stoppage unless the two sides reached a contract deal. And as of last night, the union said on Twitter that a deal had not been reached. They said, "We are ready to work for as long as it took to reach a fair deal, but management walked away from the table with 5 hours to go. We know what we're worth. That's great. And I like this even more. If you bring this up, they've established a needle for how likely a walkout is, and it's buried on the walkout certain thing. I like that. As someone who has to spend a lot of time on the election stuff on the New York Times, I appreciate that. But anyway, we were talking about this before the show. The New York Times isn't necessarily a place that we think of or go to get like the most pro-worker message. But they have as much right as any employee to strike if they believe they're being mistreated. What do you think?
Yeah, I think they should take a page out of the playbook of the nurses strike across the country, because the nurses aren't just striking for their own purposes to get better hours, better wages, have a less stressful work environment. They're also very concerned about the patients and how the hospital is managing the floors. I mean, they're putting patients that should be in the ICU on floors where people are treated for lower acuity cases. They don't have the resources necessary to give the patients the care they need. And they're watching people die, and they're watching healthcare in America deteriorate because of profit motives in these hospitals. So they're also on strike because they don't want to see this happen in their workplace. They're having an impact on the larger country and the industry. If you're a worker at the New York Times and you don't like what your editors are up to, you can also withhold your labor to send a message that we need to have more say over what these final stories look like. And maybe then we'll see the New York Times give better coverage towards workers' rights and labor. But I strongly feel that the type of person who takes a job at the New York Times believes they are fundamentally different from the type of person that is a warehouse worker in Amazon. So their idea of class consciousness is limited to, well, we deserve this because we're a different kind of person than those people. I think they need to realize their solidarity with workers everywhere and the limited power they have, because they do have to sell their labor in order to make a living, to the New York Times.
Yeah, that seems plausible to me. I'm not a psychic. I can't say what they on average view, you know, or think of when it comes to this, let alone any individual. And by the way, it's not just journalists, it's other employees too, some of which, you know, probably don't have nearly as much influence or power or pay or benefits as others. We don't know. It's a lot of people though. I do know that. What I do know is that when you withhold your work, when it's 1,100 people, that's probably gonna impact the New York Times, I would gather. They're trying to reassure everyone that things are gonna be like totally cool. The spokesperson for the New York Times, Danielle Rhodes, says in a statement, they're still in negotiations. It's disappointing that they are taking such an extreme action when we are not at an impasse. Well, is it that extreme? I mean, it's only for a day, and they gave you guys like a week advance notice on the whole thing. But anyway, they said they have solid plans in place to continue producing content, which includes relying on international reporters and other journalists who are not union members. So I don't like that last bit at all. I don't know how you easily and immediately replace that many journalists. Maybe they have been dabbling with that new AI chatbot and they're gonna produce some news that way. I don't know. It seems like this is probably gonna hurt, and that is after all kind of the point. And by the way, I will close by saying this. If you want to support this effort, you can do it in a lot of the normal ways that you would with any group that's striking. But also people, including Amanda Hess on Twitter, are asking for readers not to engage on any New York Times platforms today and to stand on the digital picket line. So don't go to the website, don't listen to the podcast, don't do your Wordle or whatever. Don't go for the recipes, like, because obviously they're gonna have trouble producing the content. But if they also see a hit to people's interest in engaging with their company, then that might buttress the movement too. Any final thoughts, Jessica?
Yeah, it's an interesting point you just made there. Like, they're not gonna be able to make as much content because their employees are on strike, obviously, but they're also telling them to boycott simultaneously, which kind of makes it easier on them, because if they're experiencing less traffic, they need to produce less content. It's an interesting strategy.
Okay, let's mix it up. Everyone go to the New York Times now. Start reloading.
Put the pressure on.
Exactly. Break the site. Okay, with that said, we have a lot more news to talk about. Coming up in just a little bit, Charlie Kirk is still trying to work through his feelings when it comes to the loss of Herschel Walker. We're gonna try to help him out after this. Okay, everybody, this is a story that frustrates me very deeply. Let's jump, hold on. Ryan says, John auditioning for Teen Wolf sequel. I did like that movie growing up anyway. Not the show, I haven't seen that, but the movie's good. Okay, wait, Blue Lizard Guts says, stop making fun of John's hair or he'll be back with the bad buzz cut again. Thanks, I guess. Anyway, okay, let's talk about the news. This week, President Joe Biden signed a piece of legislation intended to stop the practice of setting up confidentiality agreements that preemptively block victims of sexual harassment from publicly speaking out about the experiences that they have. That's the good news. There is a bad side to this, though, that we're gonna get to. So first of all, what does it actually do? The law bars the use of non-disclosure agreements, commonly called NDAs, that employees or contractors are required to sign, often as a fundamental condition of employment. The law would make existing non-disclosure agreements unenforceable. It also would apply to any agreements between providers of goods and services and their customers. Any agreements signed after a dispute or regarding any other allegations, such as discrimination based on race or religion, would not be affected by the law. And that is where I have a massive problem with this. And of course, I understand, I'm sure you all understand, any piece of legislation doesn't fix every problem or even every facet of a particular problem. And they're saying they're going to return to this and expand on it. But my issue isn't just with the fact that it only deals with sexual harassment. That's fine, legislation can be targeted. Hopefully they will involve other sorts of discrimination as well. But the issue is that it only affects people who had been forced to sign those agreements and then had the experiences. So if people had the experiences of being sexually harassed and then as a part of some sort of settlement or agreement signed an NDA, then they are still bound. There's no freeing up of them. And that bothers me. Not that they're not in some way when they sign that, I guess, free to not do it. But we understand that just like with the sexual harassment, there is massive implied explicit pressure to sign those agreements. You could be worried about your livelihood being gone if you don't, losing your career, being blacklisted, God only knows what else. And so many people, the majority in this case, probably women, are being pressured into signing these agreements that they shouldn't have to sign. Would probably love to talk about their experience because the abusers are still out there right now, but they're not receiving any sort of help from this legislation. And that's where I think it really falls short. But Jessica, what do you think?
Yeah, I think that's a really good point because I mean, the legislation clearly says being forced into signing an NDA, but if that happens at the beginning of employment, you really want the job, you sign the NDA, you take it, and then eventually, you encounter some kind of terrible situation where you're experiencing sexual harassment at the workplace, bad situation. Yeah, of course you should be able to talk about that. But then, of course, there's situations where you don't sign an NDA when you start employment, something happens, and then they say, we're gonna settle this because we don't want this kind of bad press, and then they force your hand in signing an NDA. That shouldn't be allowed. Like, you shouldn't be allowed to do that. And this legislation could very easily address that if they didn't have this one loophole. I really don't like that. But if you're an employer, you should have no problem with people talking about what happened, because of course you handled it correctly, you punished that employee, you made sure it didn't happen again, and that happens every single time, right? So you have nothing to hide? No, yeah. We know that's not how it goes. Protects corporations and bosses.
100%. By the way, there is some shocking stuff in here though. As part of the statement from Congress on the signing of this, they say today, 1 in 3 workers is subjected to NDAs that hide sexual misconduct in order to protect a business's reputation. We're taking the gag off of survivors and pushing businesses to create safer work environments. So, well, to be clear, you're taking the gag off of some survivors based on when the agreement was signed. But to be fair, you are taking it off for some. But 1 in 3 workers is subjected to NDAs like that. I've worked at a lot of different jobs. So far as I know, I've never signed anything like that. I guess maybe I haven't read the fine print, but that is obviously untenable. And while I have many problems with this legislation, it is a reminder that it is clearly necessary if it's affecting the tens of millions of people or more. By the way, as a reminder of the sorts of areas that this will fall short, I believe it was, Ashley, our producer, points out that this isn't going to apply to, for instance, Gretchen Carlson. Her NDA, that was signed as part of a reported $20 million settlement with Fox News. So she's still bound, doesn't get to talk about what happened. The various people that were harassed and abused by Elon Musk, including the woman who was brought on to do massages that he offered a horse to in exchange for some sort of erotic massage? Well, they apparently had her sign an NDA after the fact. So I guess she never gets to say what happened to her, despite the fact that the guy doing the harassing is the biggest defender of free speech on the face of this earth. It's weird that he wouldn't want her talking about that. And this is particularly damning because it's one thing when, as Jessica was sarcastically talking about, the company can claim that they've moved on, they've gotten rid of the harasser. Why do we need to bring this up? But in this case, it's the same dude. He's still in charge of the company. He could still be doing these same things. We should know everything that we can about this, about the experience of these workers. But unfortunately, again, that's not going to be fixed by this legislation. Yeah.
Yeah. Hilarious that Elon was like, my bad, do you want a pony? Like, is that something you would like, girl? So weird. No, give me $20 million like Fox News. He offered her a horse.
Buy my own pony with the $20 million. It's so weird. It's so entitled, but also elitist and gross. Like, that's what you offer, you weirdo. God. No, seriously. Like, I know that, especially if you don't have enough money to make ends meet, the idea of more money seems like the solution to all problems. And it sure can solve a lot of problems. You have to reach a certain threshold to be able to live without constantly being in fear of losing everything. But after a certain point, should we really be jealous of these people? I mean, Elon Musk spends all day responding to right-wing grifters on Twitter. That's his actual life. And for intimacy, he has to try to sling racehorses in exchange for hand jobs. Like, do we really need to be that jealous of this? And he's the richest. He's the richest person in the world. And that is how fundamentally sad his life is. So money can solve a lot of problems, and we do have a lot of problems to be solved by money. But man, it certainly can't fix you if you're fundamentally broken. With that said, we're gonna move on to other news. Whenever we're ready, we can launch in this next video.
The MAGA movement is committing suicide in front of our very eyes because of, and if you extrapolate that, that means there, and we see it in the numbers, we see it in the data, millions of people that have said we are no longer going to vote.
So Charlie Kirk is for once identifying an actual problem. There are many Republicans, look, generally there are a lot of Americans who don't want to vote, but specifically the problem for Republicans is that they did not turn out to vote in this week's runoff election. Now let's see how good he is at actually diagnosing why that's happening, what needs to be done to fix it. Let's jump into a bit more.
I do sympathize with being upset with the Republican Party and not totally trusting the system, but not participating at all guarantees the other side to be able to play games. And if everything was broken and lost, how did we win the House of Representatives? If everything is broken and lost, how did Ron Johnson, who stood up against the pharmaceutical company, win in Wisconsin? If everything was broken and lost, how did Ron DeSantis win by 17 votes? How did we win the House by getting wins in California and New York?
Okay, so I definitely have thoughts about a couple of different parts of that, but Jessica, I'll give you first crack. What do you think about the argument he's making there?
You know, it's ridiculous the way he's talking about the Republican Party as if they are the same team as the typical Donald Trump voter. There's a lot of disaffected working class people that saw Donald Trump as a disruptor, and they voted for him in 2016. A lot of people that were not participating in politics. And of course, when they see that when you elect someone, they end up not governing for you or making good on their campaign promises of draining the swamp and actually shaking up American politics, of course, they're gonna go back to being disaffected and not wanting to participate in the political process. The typical American voter is apathetic. They don't love either party. They don't see that party as their team. So the way he has this, we won the House, is not something that's going to motivate these voters to participating again. If you want a base of voters to cast ballots for you, you need to fight for policies that are popular among the typical American voter, which is a working class person who's economically struggling. That's why we see the message of economic populism winning and people like John Fetterman winning in really tough states.
Yeah. Yeah. And also, there's so much of these missing there. I mean, why is it that you, to his question, why did we win the House? but clearly they can't win in the Senate. Well, to win these Senate races, you have to convince more people to vote for you. To win the House, in theory, that would be good. But it turns out you can also do some shady redistricting. You could effectively win it just purely based off of that if you want to. You don't have to win over any additional voters. And so they definitely did that. Now, to his more general point about, like, you can be frustrated with the party or politicians or the government generally, but you still have to participate. That is definitely a good point. But I would ask Charlie Kirk, who convinced them not to participate? Who convinced them that this entire thing was a scam and a fraud? Like, it's inconvenient for you now for everyone to think that their vote won't count. Do we want to go back and see what he had to say about 2,000 mules over the past year or so? Or the big lie? Stop the steal. Remember, Charlie Kirk was busing people to the Capitol before the riot. Okay, he didn't participate or whatever, supposedly, but he was not allowing the actual way that things are supposed to run to continue. He told them, don't trust the election. And what do you know? Some of them don't trust the election. But honestly, I don't think he's individually the most responsible for this, but he also doesn't seem willing to identify the person who's individually most responsible, which continues to be Donald Trump. Now, he's not the only one. They're all preaching that the whole thing is rigged and it's a scam and you shouldn't trust any of it. You shouldn't early vote. You shouldn't mail in vote, although they seem to be moving on that. But Donald Trump individually is the person most pushing that. And if they want their base to change, they can't just say like, hey, you gotta vote. They have to fight the person who's actively encouraging people to check out of the system. Jessica.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. That's the other layer to this, is that this is a self-fulfilling prophecy. If you tell people there was election fraud, the election was rigged, why on earth would they be motivated to go cast a ballot again if our elections are invalid and they're rigged and there's fraud? I mean, it's so obvious they're not thinking any steps ahead at all. They're doing whatever they can to win in the present moment, which is how they operate. And they have some long-term strategies, but the Republicans fundamentally are a party, and they have been for quite some time, that will center any issue that will get them votes while they actually govern on behalf of corporations. So we saw under Nixon, it became abortion. They could get socially conservative voters to then vote for them. Under Donald Trump, they were like, well, if we just put this guy in front of people and as the head of the party, we'll keep getting those votes. We can win the presidency. And what are we going to do? We're going to pass tax breaks for corporations and the ultra wealthy while he's in office. But the consequence is now you're relying on this base of voters that are motivated by a guy who's just lying constantly. It's not sustainable.
Yeah, yeah, 100%. And so that I think is definitely a long-term problem. I mean, look, I don't think Republican voters are affected nearly enough by how little any of their elected officials seem to care about their lives. Like, I feel like it should be abundantly clear, indisputable, that these people don't care about you and you should get rid of all of them. That isn't the case, but I do believe, as you're laying out, that they are, I think, like through osmosis, they've got to be getting a little bit of that nothing's being done. And then on top of that, though, one thing that it's possible Charlie Kirk in the full show goes into it. I'm not like most people. I have no interest in sitting down and listening to him talk for an hour. Is it possible that Herschel Walker was a terrible candidate? Is maybe that a part of it? Maybe it isn't just a generalized distrust of the system or voting, although that is a problem. I mean, after all, you will note they were able to overcome that to get Brian Kemp elected. And all of the other statewide races went to the Republicans. So we've identified a variable, actually. Like, you're implying it's a constant. It's apparently not enough for them to lose in all these other cases, but it was enough for Herschel Walker to twice be beat by Raphael Warnock. So maybe there's a reason for that. Maybe you should have someone, like, maybe your efforts to apologize for and poo-poo the scandal allegations and all of his lies and all of his clear inadequacies and issues and all of that, maybe that was a bad call. Maybe you should have had a better candidate. Maybe virtually any other Republican would have easily walked away with this thing. So there's a lot of things to blame. And he is at least sort of trying to engage with the idea that there should be growth. But he's also, I think, like partly due to ignorance and partially intentionally because he doesn't want to identify that Trump is a problem, he is missing so many of the issues that they need to fix. Any final thoughts?
Yeah, just that this is American politics. We have on one side people like Charlie Kirk saying, you know, if you don't vote for your lawmakers, people who hate you will vote people in. And then you have people like Nancy Pelosi saying, give us $5, vote blue, or else they're going to keep taking your rights away. Instead of them just fighting for our rights when they had the majority and getting something done, or at least trying, even if they don't think they can get every vote, they need to pass legislation that would protect the right to abortion on a federal level. I mean, seriously, it's both sides saying the other side hates you and we don't hate you. Instead of them actually exemplifying what they're going to do and governing in a way that benefits everyday people. It's just the mess of American politics today.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah, they'll try to sort of secondhand imply that they care. They talked about inflation or gas prices, but again, they're not focusing on what is actually gonna be done to fix those problems. Well, unfortunately, that's all the time we have for the first hour of the show. So for those of you on the linear platforms of the podcast, thank you for listening and or watching, but there's more to come. We'll be right back.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.